Waukesha Galasasas, Olivia Miller. Hello, my name is Olivia Miller, and today I'm here with Don Gentry and William Ray Jr. And today they're joining me so I can do my senior project podcast, and we're just going to be talking about what they do and some aspects in tribal rights and laws and what we need to take to be able to have those kind of benefits in our community. So, Don, if you'd like to introduce yourself and kind of a background.
Yeah, Don Gentry. I'm a Klamath Tribal member and worked in the Tribes and Natural Resources Department for about 25 years before I came onto the council in 2010. Hunt, fish, don't trap, but I do gather and practice our cultural traditions in our treaty rights area. So have a little bit of background and experience about the subject matter. Honored to be here today. I'm the son of Gene Gentry, who's no longer with us. But he was the first chairman of the Klamath Indian Game Commission after Kimball versus Callahan.
Nice. William, if you would like.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. William Ray Jr., the current tribal chairman of the Klamath Tribes, and it's an honor to be here and be a part of this project. I've lived here all my life along Agency Lake, and so a traditional practitioner. So I really believe deeply in our tribe's ancestral rights that have been here forever, and finding ways on how we can improve our rights to exercise them and our resources. And it's very important to our overall culture. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you guys for joining me today. So I think we can just get right into it. You guys both lived here for a while. So I just want to ask you, what like motivates you to keep working in the tribe and want to keep having us improve, you know? Whoever, Don.
Okay. Well, I mean, I live here, really deeply concerned about the ability for our people to be the people I think Creator intended us to be. And that a part of that is to be able to exercise our rights and have the resources there for us to do that. And just concerned about the overall health and welfare of our folks, you know, living here in the community. I've seen some of the social problems that we have. Know a lot of that's related to our inability to practice our culture and traditions, you know, because of the lack of resources that face us and other social traumas that have been brought upon us. So just interested in helping where I can as a tribal member, and also my current capacity as the Klamath Tribe's Natural Resources Specialist.
All right.
And this is the first time becoming chairman that I work for the Klamath Tribes. I served on other committees and boards for the General Council, but never worked for the Klamath Tribes. I've spent my four decades in the federal government with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Bureau of Land Management, and the U.S. Forest Service. And then I retired in January of 2020, and then came out of retirement to take on the role of tribal chairman. So this is my first time working directly for the tribes. But I've held a bunch of other capacity on the Economic Development Board, the Casino Board, and the Revenue Allocation Board. So I have some good overall experience. And then being a lifelong member of out there along Agency Lake, born and raised right there. So I see a lot of changes that have happened in my lifetime, along with my late 80-year-old parents who have seen major changes from the time that, especially from the time of termination when the reservation was turned over in 1961.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. I know you guys are both like huge leaders in our community and you do a lot of work. And so I just wanted to ask, like, have you faced any challenges like in the community and like outside the community with other organizations when trying to get resources or funding to help us improve for the betterment of our tribe and, you know, getting the handle of things?
Yeah, I know Chairman could talk about that, and I could talk about that for quite a while. You know, the one of the real difficulties that we have is the lands that we tried to reserve to continue to be who we are and intended to be, hunt, fish, trap, gather, practice our traditions and culture and religious practices. You know, we eventually lost that land, you know, through a series of actions after Congress passed the Termination Act without our approval. And that left our land to be managed by the Forest Service and State of Oregon, and even where we have concerns out our outside our treaty rights area, BLM and other federal agencies, land management agencies and regulatory agencies have failed to really recognize the responsibility that they have as agencies, the federal government, to address our treaty resource needs. You know, that's the courts have framed that as a trust responsibility. When we signed the treaty and ceded those lands, you know, there's a commitment to look out for our interest. And there's a real awkward paternalistic relationship, like somehow they're going to be our paternalistic entity that protected our interest. Those federal agencies that fully recognize the treaty, that trust obligation, even though there's been a number of court actions that affirm that, and it's been embroiled in some policies that kind of come and go. It's been difficult to get those entities to really appropriately consider our interests and provide for them with the abilities and responsibilities they have.
Oh, okay. Would you like to have some input?
Oh, certainly. I think the big thing about the issue for us as a tribe, and I try to look at it on the best possible outcome, of course, when termination hit, they didn't know what to do with us, with the federal government, whether we still had they couldn't take away the treaty. They didn't abrogate our treaty rights, which was a big thing that happened, as Mr. Gentry pointed out in Kimball versus Callahan and the first Klamath Indian Game Commission when we formed the tribes after termination. So there was a lot of competing interests that went against us from the very start, with the federal government as the leader, because they didn't know what to do with us after termination. And lucky and fortunate and a blessing that the courts ruled in our favor, and especially on not only on our treaty rights, but the biggest one at ICE. I would point out to our leadership that we had during that time and their perseverance was our water rights. And that is the biggest issue that we face, because without it, we don't have much of anything without that sacred lifeblood. So here again with the water rights, and we're gaining more ground, but it's going to take a lot longer than what we had hoped for. And our biggest issue that we're trying to do, of course, is save our aquatic species. And that's all of them, including our fish and our most sacred resource, of course, for that live in our waters, is our mullet, because they've been here forever. And when Mr. Gentry and I were young, they were here, millions of them, millions. And it's unfortunate to see their demise. So when we're talking about all the competing interests, the biggest issue that faces the tribes right now is there's so many dealing with the water and on our land, especially with all the harvesting that went on. And our mule deer are at a five-decade low right now as far as numbers go. And how do we get that picked back up to where our herds used to be very vibrant and many deer? And now what we're seeing is, it's really quite alarming for myself and others in my, throughout the tribe, to see the numbers. So the competing interest is going to always remain there because of the, people moving to the area. They're having subdivisions that were never there when I was growing up, especially along the lake. There used to be open ground where there used to be nice deer herds there along Agency Lake. And then with all these subdivisions that they've had, no one would have thought that Tableland would be a subdivision, or Sycan River Estates, or the Black Hills. It's really has done nothing but be a detriment to our habitat for the muleys and the antelope, because that's what we re-hunted back in the day, was the mule deer and the chow, the antelope. So anyways, there's always competing interests that we're all constantly fighting against to protect our rights and our culture and our way of life. And that's what working for the tribes means. And working in tribal government is doing everything to save all that.
Yeah. So I'm a part of the Tribal Youth Council, and I think it was about 2 years ago or so, we went to D.C. And, you know, as youth, we also noticed, like, a change in the land and stuff. And so we had the opportunity to take our, our concerns to some government officials, and we also went to advocate to them about how, like how you're saying that they were kind of people disrespecting our treaty rights. So, because we also heard concerns from other community members that we talked to about how out in the forest and stuff, they leave the big machinery out there and stuff, and roads are getting messed up. So I just wanted to let you know that, you know, the youth see it too, and we also want to see a change for the better, and we're also fighting along with you guys.
Yeah, that's so wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's an important part, because you're going to be the leadership when we of course there's every tribe that's passing the torch from our elders to our young, and that's part of our responsibility that myself and Mr. Gentry and others in the tribe are trying to do. So really have a lot of good I have good feelings about the youth coming up and hearing some of, like yourself, speaking in these ways of wanting to be engaged and looking out for our culture and our resources and what your eyes are seeing, because that's part of science. Science is observation. Mm-hmm. In the real world, science is observation. And when you see things that doesn't look right, that means that you're working science. The science is working, and you're working the science. So that's a really good, a great thing. So I appreciate those words, and I want to encourage you to keep going with all your, all the people on the, all the, everyone on the youth council, because it's important. Thank you.
Thank you. So bringing back to like the water rights and land rights, you know, so since we're federally recognized, how, like, what kind of benefits do we get that other tribes wouldn't, because they're not federally recognized?
Well, they're, because of the treaty and, somewhat a recognition that there is responsibility to fulfill the treaty, you know, there, the federal government does provide funding for us, you know, through Indian Health and other programs, and it usually isn't sufficient, but it is a problem for those federal entities to fully, and even Congress, to fully recognize our treaty rights. I was just thinking when you talked about visiting back there, my experience in the visits that I had back there with a lot of the congressionals, they didn't even know anything about treaties, about treaty rights, didn't know anything specifically about the obligations to the Klamath tribes. They hold the purse strings, so to speak. And they even support or not support policies that have a negative or positive impact on the tribe sometimes without fully understanding. And just our whole political system, a lot of those folks are voted in by people that have money, that pay for money for their campaigns, and they have interests that are often in competition, direct competition and conflict with our interests. And so that's a big problem. You know, there's even folks that are so in support of ag and other industry and forest industry, what drives their politics and, you know, lack of attention and in consideration of addressing our needs, that's not really on their hearts and minds most of the time. So it's a big problem. So the way the government works isn't helpful. The laws aren't strong enough, really, to protect our interest. And even though there's been successful litigation, the Klamath tribes have been involved in numerous tribes, there's some foundational things that it's still hard to get those federal agencies that have that trust responsibility get them to do what they need to do to protect our interests. So it gets pretty complex in trying to figure out how we can address our needs.
Yeah.
A critical question, of course, is federal recognition and how we had to go about our, it took us a while after we were last terminated tribe from the 1950s that received federal recognition. And there was a lot of concerns over it within the tribe because our biggest deal was the interference from the federal government in our lives, in our world. And here again, when we go back on how the tribes became federally recognized, is that we recognize our sovereignty was before the United States. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't recognize that, but we were here first, and we were sovereign. And so when we ceded away 22 million acres to guarantee a peak-to-peak treaty, those were contractual arrangements. And a lot of that was broken by the federal government. They've never honored anything in our treaty except to whittle it down to what it once was from 2.2 million acres peak to peak to 866,000 at the time of termination. And there were a variety of dirty deals really done by the federal government to allow that to be eroded away. But what is viable is that ratification of that document called the Treaty of 1864 that's held in the Constitution of the United States. And that helped us to regain our federal recognition in 1986 as a tribe. So the tribes that don't have that are in somewhat limbo with a relationship and a government-to-government relationship with the federal government. So, and there's many tribes in that that situation, and I'm just thankful that we were able to receive that again, because that just reinforces our relationship again that we had ever since we ceded away 22 million acres and retained this land, which once was ours and now is another ownership under the peak-to-peak Treaty of 1864.
Yeah, I just, tribes that have treaties through Act of Congress or the Constitution have the ability to negotiate treaties government to government, and it is contractual. So tribes that don't have treaties or aren't federally recognized, the government doesn't recognize that trust obligation. Even though they may recognize it with us, they're not completely fulfilling it in other tribes also.
Yeah. So just to take a little bit of a different direction, so what are some, like, successes that you guys have witnessed the tribes go through, like, even being federally recognized and even just on our own? What are some of the biggest successes that you guys are most proud of and think are most successful for our tribe?
Yeah, I just think, after termination and all the things that happened to us and even the way that the act was employed, you know, it kind of separated our tribal members that were born after 54, after the Termination Act, descendants. And there was remaining members after termination that had land. So we had descendants and withdrawing members and remaining members, but we've always been one tribe. So when I think of the successes, I think that we survived, you know, after termination and all those things that created a lot of the problems. I'm just thankful because our people are survivors. You know, we formed the Klamath Alcohol and Drug Abuse Entity to help us with, and it was all put together by tribal members, had very limited funding, you know, to try to help us address those alcohol and addiction problems. The Organization of Forgotten Americans was formed, and they tapped into funding that was available for underserved communities, so they served our members and other folks. We didn't have the benefits that the government committed to us before they passed the Termination Act and, in effect, wadded and threw away the treaty. Our people still gathered. We were still Indians, even though people said that we weren't, because we weren't federally recognized. So our people survived, and it was through entities like the Organization of Forgotten American that were able to organize and be successful in the Kimball versus Callahan treaty rights cases. We had Native American Rights Fund, which at that time was a new Indian law firm, come to serve us, and that was one of their premier cases, first cases that they were successful in. And then, of course, the Adair case flew out of that. But then all the efforts for restoration to be federally recognized again, folks that were gathered around there, and we were still meeting and strategizing how to become federally recognized. So the Restoration Act was another real positive thing. So success in those litigation, affirming that we still have treaty rights despite the loss of the lands, and that were, again, restored. And it's recognized that the federal government, they actually, through the Restoration Act, didn't give us treaty rights. I hear that all the time, that we retained those treaty rights. Those were still there, even though we were terminated. But they further affirmed those treaty rights and then set forth provisions to return land back to the tribe, which hasn't happened, you know, by act of Congress.
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest things, and I agree with Mr. Gentry on this one for sure, because if you think about termination and what happened to us, it was trauma, generational trauma that we've survived. And we, our people didn't stop practicing our culture, because the families that stayed, we continued to gather, we continued to hunt, we continued to fish, we continued to do all those things culturally, like it was no different, really. I didn't understand, because my generation was the first to grow up after termination. We didn't. I didn't quite understand all the land ownership, because it didn't feel like we ever gave anything up. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, the access to our waterways became very limited. Okay, and so when we look at the successes, I think it was, as pointed out, survival and resiliency of our families and our tribal members. And the biggest one of the success was they couldn't do away or abrogate the Treaty of 1864, no matter what they did in the Termination Act. And these rights that we retain today are going to live forever. And we need to constantly remind them of that, remind the federal government of those responsibilities and the trust that they have to us. These cases like U.S. versus Adair and all the Kimball versus Callahan cases, critical. And then here recently, of course, the two biggest celebrations of success is the dam removal on the Klamath River. And now we got work on the last two impediments, the ones at Keno Dam and the Link River, to get our fisheries, get our sea otters up here, where we can have them contribute to our overall health of our system to regain that. And then the other success that happened in 2024, there were two big successes for the tribes. One was the dam removal, and then there was the agency barns, the 14,000 acres of wetlands that were brought back in line of where it used to be there along the upper agency lake there off of 7 Mile. And then the other thing that the tribes have done, even though we're still trying to fine-tune our economic development model, is building the casino in 1998, building the Crater Lake Junction Travel Center in 2008 and 2009, and then here in 2015, 16, building the Sleep Inn. But we need to move that forward as rapidly as possible, our economic development, to be able to buy our land back, buy chunks of it back as quick as we can. Because any time that we can get it back in our ownership, we can put it back where it once was, to be very productive, productive pieces to build on our collapsing grocery store for our resources. So a lot of good successes, and there are a lot of tribal members that work for the tribes right now delivering a lot of services to tribal members and all over, whether it's health or administration. So there's a lot of good things to say about how where we're at, but certainly we can improve it, and there's a lot of areas that we can definitely move out in and make it better for all of us. So that's my commitment to the tribes to do all that as much as we can do.
I wanted to mention too the purchase of the Rocky Ford Ranch and Hog Creek Ranch. You know, those are other things. There are a list of many things, you know, and many steps that helped us get there. I was just thinking about the dam removal. It really wasn't noticed by a lot of or even celebrated by our members, but we were real significant in the litigation that required fish passage on those dams. And we invested a lot of legal resources and technical resources to go through the mound of documents that through the licensing process that eventually required Pacific Corps to provide fish passage. And that, and so there's a lot of work that was done that we could probably go on and you know, celebrate those things. But it certainly is hard to get where we need to get. We'll probably, I know the focus of our Constitution is to reacquire our lands back, you know, because if we owned those lands and had control of those lands, we could make sure the right thing is done by them, you know, for all the purposes that they served us before. But that's a big thing, and it hasn't happened yet, even though the Restoration Act envisioned return of some lands to the tribes, and we advocated for the whole 54 reservation to come back, and that was shot down. So we're grappling with how do we do it with limited funds and lack of commitment of the federal government.
Yeah. So I believe our tribe is really sustainable. I think we're doing all like a really good job on, you know, focusing on our traditions and who we are and keeping it going, you know. But, you know, with the next decades coming up and the youth, what do you think, like, as a community and as us, as a tribe, like, what should we prioritize in keeping the betterment of our community? It can be anything small or big, you know. Like, how should we be able to connect more? Because I know we, our community does suffer from substance abuse and other different issues that kind of corrupt relationships that we have. So do you guys have any tips or anything you'd like to say that you might want to give?
Yeah, the thing I think of is just continue to be committed to decolonization, mm-hmm. and just acknowledging the traumas that affect our community. Embrace our culture and traditions. And, you know, I've learned over time, you know, from understanding some of the legends and some of communications that I've had with elders that I was privileged to know that are no longer with us. You know, one of the things that's important to acknowledge from their perspective is Creator created everything around us to provide for us, but He also placed us here. So we have a connection and a responsibility to make sure things are managed in a good way to provide for everything Creator intended us to do. I am concerned because of the lack of resources, the lack of our Tsuam and Kaptu in the lower Buildeer populations, and the fact that our forest is so out of whack that we can't even gather some of the traditional foods that we used to. You know, that impedes us. So if we focus on trying to restore and promote those things, you know, where we can, and take advantage of harvesting and being out there and practicing our subsistence culture and traditions, it's a wonderful, healthy thing for our families. It's healing. But just knowing that, you know, our Creator intended to place us here and He cares for us, and we have that responsibility, embracing that and then confronting the traumas directly. You know, I had issues in my life when I was younger, and I sought counseling, and you know, I was a punk on the streets of Chilliwack for a while, and Creator helped me, and I actually was a volunteer at CADA and was trained to become an alcohol drug counselor, and over the years of just basically recognize that we have issues, and it's not because we're predisposed or bad people, because of the traumas that have happened, it's kind of sent us reeling, and we weren't dealing with things in a healthy way. So also we embrace family, our tribalism, you know, our culture, our traditions, and continue to exercise our practices. That's a big part of our holistic healing.
Just to add on to that, I'm, as a traditional practitioner, the liberation of our cultures, going back to our ways of Klamath, Modoc, and Yuhuskin is what's important, because there's a lot of things that go on that can be adopted in thinking that it's Klamath, Modoc, Yuhuskin, which is not. So we got to go back to what our ancestors taught us, our old people, and follow in their footsteps, because our ancestors had ceremonies when went through difficult times, like when there was something wrong with our waterways. We had ceremony for that. Or when things weren't right in the natural world, to go to these special places and fast and pray and sweat. So it's going to come down to sacrificing for our Creator and knowing that we are worthy of our being stewards of our lands all over again in a way that we have to compete with all the modern society that we have, because it's not going to go away. And of course, there's going to be more and more people moving to the Klamath Basin, our area, because of its beauty and all the things that it offers. But it has some adverse effect. And of course, that means that when we don't have our grocery store completely viable of plums and service berry and chokecherries, the first foods, the roots, that has an adverse effect on practicing these ancient traditions. So we need to keep focused on moving back as quickly as possible those ancient cultures, traditions, and ceremonies that our ancestors passed down to all of us, especially those connections that I had the opportunity to hear from a lot of old people, old ones that knew our culture, that spoke our language, knew our songs and everything. And we really need to get back to that way. And all of us, because it's going to take a tribe. That's what makes a tribe, is all of us working together on all that stuff collectively. So good questions you're asking. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Of course.
If I could add to, I was just thinking one of the things that's been a healthy thing for us is to acknowledge who we are and that we are important, and to really make our presence known in the community. There's been a time, you know, just because of everything that happened, is us, you know, being a native and having a point of view that might conflict with our neighbors. We just kind of kept quiet, you know, and we were abused by the Indian agents, and you know that we suffered some of that. So just embracing who we are and actually forging relationships with folks that are in our community that aren't going to go, hey, I've been kind of encouraged after so many years of feeling really negative about our non-native folks here, just kind of judging them all. And in reality, there's folks that get to know us and care for us and start caring about our interests and realizing that we're only after good things that will not only benefit us, but will benefit them in the long run. Not that everybody's going to get there, because I've had confrontations with folks that are racist and really dug in. And but I've been surprised that there are folks, even in the agricultural community and in other parts of our community, that support our interests. So continue being out there, forging those relationships. And I've shared this a bunch of times, so I just remember, I don't know where it came from, but I've heard it numerous times, that because of the people we are, that if we had a visitor and the only thing we had to share with that visitor was a flea, we'd share that flea. You know, so embracing that, as risky as it is, is going to be a helpful thing for our young people to consider. Be proud of yourself. Be thankful that you're who Creator intended you to be, and stand up and be that person in your community. Mm-hmm.
So this is also a learning process for me, and, you know, a lot of things you guys mentioned I did not know anything about, and my plan is to go into higher education and bring back any knowledge I have so I can teach our tribe and stuff. So kind of just to close out, would what the advice I got was that we should try implementing more to our youth and other people, like about our tribes and traditions, getting back into the swing of things. And what do you think I can do better, or what should I focus on to help the betterment of our tribe in the near future?
I think doing what you're doing, being interested and concerned about our people, and just asking that question. Whether I mean, there was a time when I saw our people kind of struggled with education because it was kind of taking away our culture and traditions. A lot of the practices in the boarding schools were punished for practicing those. So I know a lot of our Native people struggled with education. You know, I've even heard elders say, don't go to college, they're going to teach you everything, the Indian out of you, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But in reality, in order for us to be successful and protect our interests in this complex world, we need to have biologists, we need to have attorneys, we have people that are educated, and you know, leaders like that. So seeking an education and considering how to do that. The other thing I wanted to, it's a little bit back on the question you had. You know, a lot of our people don't even know. I mean, Chairman Ray and I are privileged to have lived through some things that our young people don't even know about. And I'm hoping that as we move forward with developing our Living Culture Center Museum, that we'd have some history about the folks that really led us through before termination and after termination. And we actually have historical information that will help people to understand all those legal actions, the things that we did. So, I mean, I was kind of shocked when I heard a young person say, who's Chuck Kimball? I'm going, you mean you don't know who Chuck Kimball is? And he was chairman at the time of Restoration. And So I'm just thinking a lot of our folks don't even know my great aunt Marie Norris, who was an instrumental person in developing the Organization of Forgotten Americans. Who's that? I think of other people, you know, that were leaders before termination and after termination, and then all these things have happened. It's not really stored somewhere and shared with our community. And I think it's helpful in our healing process to have something like that that our young colored people can look at. And then the greater community, the non-tribal community, to understand, you know, our history and culture.
Mm-hmm. My advice is to know where you came from, and that's from our ancestors, and really get to know exactly what they endured, because there was a major change from when that time came, and then know who you are and know where you're going. And I think those three things that my elders taught me was never forget about who you are as an Indian, as a Klamath, Mohawk, or Yuhuskin, or all the above. And there has to be a balance between the modern world and the traditional world, and never forget about the traditional world that we all enjoy, because it's a great honor to be tribal. And it's it has responsibilities with it, and that's to carry our culture forward. What people know, the Klamath, Mohawk, Yuhuskin ways of our culture, that's important, because they're very unique. Even the three tribes are different in their way that they practice, spoke, way how they believed, and they're great, honorable, very critical things to keep alive. And here again, the biggest test is going to be how far these phones will be the corrupter of that balance between the modern world and the traditional world, because most of the traditional ways that I learned was word of mouth from my elders to the young, and that's how I learned. And it was actual practical watching, observing, and that's how they taught on those things. And I can still see those faces of my elders that I miss here today, and I get choked up about it, because it's tough, because a lot of our elders have passed, that the young doesn't have a benefit. And I'm talking about the old ones in there. When I was growing up, there was a lot of people in their 80s and 90s that knew our world very well, and they passed it on to us. And there's a handful of us that still know it. And we got to seek those people out that know, had that connection with the old people. And it's not their parents, it's their grandparents is what I'm talking about. And I think that would be the balance for all of us, because we're all kind of in this modern world, and not to lose sight of the real world, which is the traditional world of the Yuskin, Modocs, and Klamis. And thank you for allowing me to be a part of your project. I really appreciate it, and I'm very honored. And wish you all the best in your future. Thank you.
Thank you.
I echo that, too. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you guys for joining me today, and I think this is where we end. Thank you.
Don't you?